regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We are continuing our Mondays with Mark Tradition here. Mark Walters from Armed American Radio going to be with us on the program here in just a moment talking about, well, let's see, Trump's Madison Square Garden rally and the media freakout. I saw, you know, it's funny, I saw a headline just before he started doing this, political suicide for Donald Trump. Haven't they been saying that for like, I don't know, 9 years at this point? Everything he does is political suicide, and then it doesn't seem to be political suicide. So, yeah, they are, of course, flipping out about the rally in New York City. We'll also be talking with Mark about a Second Amendment success story in New York, as well as his latest thoughts on the election 8 days away. I'm not making any predictions, not today. But as I told Mark, I would rather be in Trump's position than Kamala Harris's position with a week to go here. All right, so let's get started. Our lengthy conversation with Mark Walters, host of Armed American Radio. Take a look and a listen. Mark, good Monday to you. Thanks very much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me, Cam. Mondays with Mark. I love it.
I do, too. I love it. A chance for us to digest some of the stuff that went on over the weekend, over the past week. Let's start with a non-2A topic for just a minute, if we can, because we are just a little bit more than a week away from Election Day. And we've seen both candidates kind of creep outside their comfort zone a little bit, I guess. Kamala Harris going to Texas for a big rally in Houston with Beyonce, even though I don't think Kamala's going to win the Lone Star State. Donald Trump, I don't think he's going to win New York either, but he was in New York City, Madison Square Garden, huge rally. Although, Mark, it's crazy. I mean, if you look at the media coverage, it's almost like Trump didn't even speak because everybody's talking about Tony Hinchcliffe, right? That's the big story. A comedian comes out and tells, you know, maybe not the right type of jokes for a political rally, but the type of jokes that Tony Hinchcliffe is known for, right? Kind of picking on everybody. And this is now, you know, the media is now portraying this as if this was a meeting of the Hitler Youth or the German-American Bund in the 1930s, right? This was a Nazi MAGA rally in the heart of New York City.
They've been setting this up for the last, since he announced this rally. And I couldn't help but go to MSDNC today to look at it, but their lead headline story was, "With racist rally, Trump and his allies prove the Democrats' points. Watch AOC calls Trump campaign's New York City stop a hate rally. Watch why Trump's New York City rally drew comparisons to 1939 pro-Nazi demonstration." I didn't see any Nazis in attendance. I didn't hear anybody talk about murdering millions of people. I heard a message of uniting America. I heard a message of fixing our broken economy. I heard a message of fixing our border. I heard a message of getting tough on crime. Those are the things that I heard. Tony's jokes, you know, I got to wonder if that's not set up. I mean, the Trump campaign, I would think, had an idea of where he was going to go. Okay, here's my take on it. It's comedy. It's comedy. It's how we laugh at ourselves. It's what we do, the mainstream media. And the reason I say that is, I wonder if that was ginned up to get this type of coverage, because it's so off the chain. And this type of coverage works in Donald Trump's favor. It has for years. And here he packed, what, 20,000 people. From what I understand, there were another 90,000 outside that couldn't get in. You know, this was a huge rally in the heart of New York City. Is he going to win it? No, I don't think he's going to win New York City. I don't think he's going to win New York State. He'll come closer than any Republican in a long time. But the demographic shift in New York is going to be huge. I'd like to mention Mayor Eric Adams, if I could, for just a second. I don't know if you saw his clip of him defending Trump at the press conference last week, when he said, you know, how do you feel about it? He says, this rhetoric has got to stop. Donald Trump is not a fascist. Donald Trump is not a Nazi. See, he's being persecuted by the same people that are coming after Donald Trump in his own city. Adams is feeling that now. And I'm going to tell our viewers, I think Adams might be voting for Trump. He may not say that publicly, but he kind of telegraphed that the other day. I'd love to see him come out and say that publicly. I think it'd be wonderful. But I have a gut feeling he might. It sounded almost like he was going to vote for Donald Trump. So I don't know, just some fun takes on a Monday morning. But yeah, crazy stuff from the media. It's terrible to see.
It is. And I think that you're right that this is going to backfire. I don't know if this was a scripted moment from the Trump campaign. I'm pretty sure that Trump's handlers would have preferred Tony Hinchcliffe. Maybe not stick with knock knock jokes, but, you know, maybe don't give the media quite the easy target to tee up. But, you know, as you say, we've been hearing this rhetoric, right, for God, 8 years now. As Trump has continued to make gains, not only with, you know, those Americans who don't have college degrees, those small town Americans, but you look at his support among Latinos, you look at his support among Black Americans, and it's growing. And the media hates that, right? The more they call him a racist, the more they call his supporters racist, the better he seems to be doing with these very groups that the media says, oh, my God, he hates you guys. And then they keep going out. And more folks are saying, well, listen, I'm going to make my decision myself, right? I'm not going to just blindly follow what the media tells me to do, not going to blindly follow what a politician tells me to do, or even my family or friends. And instead, I'm going to make up my own mind about this candidate. And again, Trump seems to be doing better. So I don't think this is going to be the October surprise that the media is going to try to make it out to be. Whether this has any lasting national impact, I don't know, any more than Kamala Harris's, you know, rally in Houston with Beyonce. I just think that those aren't the things that is going to drive people going to the polls.
No, they're already there, Cam.
Yeah, okay. But I will say Trump going to New York City, I think, is a little bit more fearless than Kamala Harris going to Houston. So in that respect, I think there's a bigger upside for Trump, right? But let's talk about something else that happened in New York a couple of days ago. Cortland, New York, the housing authority there agreed to a permanent injunction. So they will change the terms of their lease. Mark, I got to tell you, I was shocked when the Second Amendment Foundation filed suit originally in this case, because here we are more than a decade after Heller. I thought handgun bans had disappeared. But no, Cortland Housing Authority told its tenants, If you reside here, you cannot own a handgun. You might be able to own a rifle. You might be able to own a shotgun, but you can't have a handgun in your apartment for self-defense. Yeah. Second Amendment Foundation sued back in, I think it was January of this year, maybe late December of last year. February, we had a temporary injunction granted by a federal judge. And then last week, we got news of this permanent injunction. Essentially, the Cortland Housing Authority agreeing to change the terms of its lease. No more will there be a handgun ban for tenants. This is a great decision. I'm glad to see that there's a resolution. But Mark, again, I mean, what were your thoughts when you heard that this housing authority is trying to tell people, no, you can't have the most common firearm for self-defense in your home?
Not shocked at all. Not shocked at all. The second I talked with Alan about this last night on Armed American Radio's MonsterCast, this is, the seventh case that the Second Amendment Foundation has filed in similar situations. It's not the first time they've sued a housing authority.
Since
Heller. So, you know, I keep asking myself, how much higher are the Democrats willing, or lower? Let me rephrase that. How much lower can they go? Just when you think the bar is already lowered, they find a way to dig the pit deeper and scurry underneath that bar. They will continue to do that. So this is the seventh case. Not one of those cases has been appealed because they know they're going to lose. The housing project knew they were going to lose. They try it. Now, there's a couple things in play here. Number one, that's public money that supports the housing projects. That's public money. That's our taxpayer dollars if you happen to live in that area. Telling you, you can't do these things. That's government control, but they will continue to try. They'll see what they can get away with for as long as they can get away with it. And then the Second Amendment Foundation, love this hat, comes in and says, no, I don't think so. Sues them. They lose. Second Amendment Foundation has not lost one of these cases. But what this is evidence of, Cam, is the fact that they just won't stop ever. They're never going to go away. That's why these cases don't shock me. We will likely see another housing project down the road do the same thing. Second Amendment Foundation will come in and step in and fix the problem. And in this particular case, as you're well aware, they were also awarded $150,000 in attorney's fees to cover their cost to have to bring the suit. So there's no fighting this. There's no getting around it, but they will do it again. I do want to go back to the Trump rally, something you said. As I was listening to you, there's something very important I want our viewers to understand. the demographics that we're talking about, that Trump is going to pick up, as you were talking about, Black Americans, Latino voters, et cetera, who are the two fastest growing sets demographic-wise of gun owners in America? Minority Americans and women. So the gun owner aspect of this group that he's picking up also comes into play here as well. And I find it interesting that that's New York. It's New York. You probably had a lot of people travel to get to that rally, to go to that historic rally at Madison Square Garden. But nonetheless, lots and lots and lots of New Yorkers, and it's the same demographic that is also buying guns in this country in record numbers. I find that not coincidental, by the way.
Absolutely. And, you know, and again, I mean, as long as the Democrats are insistent on, you know, gun control being one of their top priorities, and not just background checks, which is what we're hearing a lot of, you know, in the closing weeks of the campaign. If you've noticed, Mark, they're not talking as much about a ban on so-called assault weapons, right? That's not really coming up in Kamala Harris's stump speech. If they bring up guns, it's either Tim Walz and I are both gun owners, or maybe they'll say, well, we need background checks so that people who shouldn't own a gun can't get a gun, right? And that's the rhetoric that they're sticking to in the closing weeks of the campaign, which I find fascinating, that all of these supposedly common sense, reasonable gun safety measures that, you know, 90% of Americans support, they're not talking about those things on the campaign trail now, because they know that 90% of Americans don't support them. They know that it's political poison to bring up these issues. But again, you know, just like you were talking about with the housing authority, these things won't go away. And by the way, with the Gorland Housing Authority, you know, Second Amendment Foundation, this is how it generally works. They identify a problem. They'll, before they file litigation, before they file a lawsuit, they'll send a letter saying, hey, there's an issue here. You need to resolve this issue. It's better for everybody if that issue gets resolved without a lawsuit, right? Better for the Second Amendment Foundation, better for gun owners, better for the people who are breaking the law. But Cortland Housing Authority. Absolutely. But the Cortland Housing Authority didn't do that. They defended that handgun ban. They went to court. They got that preliminary injunction. And then they continued to defend that handgun ban until they saw the writing on the wall and said, all right, fine, we'll do this. And again, it cost them $150,000. Plus all of their attorney's fees, right? Plus the almost year-long wait that these residents have had before they finally did the obvious thing and said, okay, we can't ban handguns in the premises. It's that type of fight that you're talking about, right? Where, again, even though it's glaringly obvious, you can't ban handguns.
No.
In some cases, we have to relitigate these fights and claw back our rights inch by inch. And it's happening, you know, all over the country. It's not just in places like New York where we're seeing these types of attacks. I mean, we're seeing attacks, Mark, you know, zoning laws. We've talked about this before, where even in red states, we're seeing communities use the zoning laws to stop gun stores from opening up, try to shut down existing gun ranges, right? To try to push our Second Amendment rights into the shadows or off to the edge of town if they're not trying to ban them from the city limits entirely.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but to have some fun with it. It's also job security for people like you and I.
Okay. Well,
you've always got something to talk about because we know they're never going to go away. And it is sad in a way. It's pathetic, but it's also very glaring. You know, you talk about how they're not talking about AR-15 bans anymore, but they raised that. And I found it fascinating that they continued to push gun control to the level they did, as long as and far into the campaign season as they did, because it's usually, as you know, they tend, both campaigns will tend to shift to the middle as we get closer and closer to an election to try to appeal to those voters that they think are in that middle as mm-hmm. that group begins to open polls and they see more and more of who that group might be. For the Democrats, it's like, hey, we might need some gun owners in here. We see it with their sorry, pathetic attempts with the John Kerry and the, you know, the camo with the tags on it. We saw that fiasco with Tim Walz. You know, even going back as far as Dukakis in that goofy tank, you know, that whole, they try to reach out to that middle. They try to get more moderate. They did not do that until what appears to be just a couple, 3 weeks, as you and I were talking about before, close to this election. And you're right. They do go. They tend to pivot to that red flag law. They tend to pivot to universal background checks. So let's just set up a scenario about background checks. Criminals get together in their criminal den, their criminal lair, and they're planning their Friday night liquor store robbery. And criminal A looks at criminal B and says, hey, man, you guys want me to be the trigger man going into the, I need more than this little stolen 380 I got. Hey, criminal B, can I have your 45? And criminal B says, well, we got to go down and get a background check for you to use this gun. Instead, no criminal in any criminal den ever. And most Americans understand the absurdity of what the Democrats are talking about. And I raise that point because it is not an attack on crime. It's a joke. That's just what I was telling you. It's a funny joke, but it's true. It's an attack on you. It's an attack on me. And it's an attack on my ability to be able to pass a shotgun to you or to pass a handgun to you or to sell you my own personal property. And it's designed to dissuade people like us from giving others or selling others our lawfully owned product. So we know exactly what their game plan is. Is it going to work for them? I don't think so. I think most Americans are seeing through this evidence of that, the fact that they're toning it down a little bit. But let's face it, it's not going to go away. Kamala Harris, if she's elected, is going to pivot back to exactly what she's doing on the border, exactly what she's doing with inflation, exactly what she's talking about or flip-flopped on fracking, exactly what she's talking about wanting to confiscate guns. It's all going to come back. And I am very hopeful from what I'm seeing and feeling that Americans are not buying this right now. All of it in total. I don't think Americans are buying it. I think it's going to be a huge victory for Trump a week from tomorrow.
You know, I don't want to jinx anything. My offering prediction.
I don't either.
Because I'm one of those guys, man. I'll sit down in front of the TV. My team's up by 14 points. And then as soon as I start watching, crap, there's a safety. They threw an interception. Yeah. So I'm not going to make any predictions. But I will say when you look at what the campaigns are saying, even, you know, talking anonymously to the press, we're seeing a lot more hand-wringing among the Democrats right now than among the Trump campaign. Democrats are talking about, you know, we're worried about the Midwest. We're worried about Pennsylvania. You look at the Real Clear Politics polling average for all of these battleground states, and Trump is now ahead in every one of those battleground states, right? And remember, typically, Trump support has been underestimated in polls in both 2016 and in 2020. So, I mean, maybe the pollsters have figured it out this time around. But historically, they have not done a very good job of capturing Trump voters. So, you know, you could add maybe 3-4 points to maybe more to the polls that we're seeing here. And, you know, there was a poll that just came out earlier today showing Trump in the lead in New Hampshire. That was a state that both Hillary Clinton won. Clinton won by, I think, like less than half a point. But Joe Biden won New Hampshire pretty comfortably 4 years ago. If Trump is, you know, now ahead in New Hampshire, then that would suggest, Mark, again, I mean, you're talking about a pretty dominating win across the country, well over 270 votes in the Electoral College. I could see that very easily. I could also, I mean, honestly, I think this is a neck and neck election. I'm concerned that, you know, Democrats are going to get out there. The fear-driven campaign that Kamala Harris is invested in may terrify some of those undecided voters enough to go out and vote. But 8 days before Election Day, I'd rather be in Trump's shoes right now than Kamala's. I'll tell you that, just looking at the polls and state of the race.
Yeah, I want to throw a personal view out there, just a personal observation. On Friday, I missed my daily show because my daughter called me and she says, "Hey, Dad, I'm on my way home from work early. Will you meet me to early vote today?" I said, "Of course." I couldn't find anybody to sit in for me, so I went ahead and ran an encore. I decided that was going to vote was with my daughter was a little bit more important. I live in a very red county that will break for Trump between 87 and 95% religiously. This is a bright red county. Now, if you're paying attention to the Georgia early voting numbers, they're off the hook records. In 2020, 165,000 came in on day one of early voting. That was 2020. On day one of early voting this year, it was just shy of 500,000. The estimate is now that we're well over 2.5 million now. So when you look at Fulton County and the four surrounding counties that make up the Atlanta metro area, really from a voting block, blue voting block, there's not enough voters in that area to overcome the numbers that we're seeing in early voting in the rest of Georgia, which is very bright red. Now, in my particular county, the line for us to vote was about an hour on a Friday afternoon at 3:45 p.m. in a very red county. Let me assure you, ladies and gentlemen, those were not Democrats coming out to vote early, not in this county. That was, I mean, you could see just from the stickers on the cars and the American flags on the pickup trucks who was voting. These are Trump people coming out in droves early. So I think they've got it figured out. And if that observation holds true, you know, you talk about polls. I forget who the poll was yesterday, Cam. I think it started with an M, a Multnomah or something like that poll, but Fox News reported it, that Harris was up 52 to Trump's 48. And then at the very bottom, it said 802 people polled. You've heard the old saying, don't pee down my back and tell me it's raining. Don't tell me 800 people tell me what Americans are thinking. That's 800 people. Now, the reality of that poll in any poll should say 52% of the 802 people we asked said this, not America. I don't care how they slice it. I don't care the science behind it. Don't tell me 800 people are representative of 320 million Americans, or for that matter, 150 or 160 million voting age Americans. That's a load of crap, and I'll never believe any of it. And I think I've been proven right. If you look back over the years, all you got to do is look at Trump's election in 2016, look at what happened in 2020, and I think that bears it out. I think Americans are smarter than that, and I think we're figuring this out little by little by little. Trump has been underestimated for years and years and years. And if you, yeah. I wouldn't want to, like you said, if you're Kamala Harris, I don't want to be in a neck and neck race with Donald Trump, if that's what quote unquote polls are showing. That means Donald Trump is at least 4 points, 5 points higher. And I don't want people getting complacent either. I don't want to jinx anything, knock on this studio desk in the Armed American Radio studio. Get out and vote, ladies and gentlemen. But my gut feeling feels pretty good. And I will be making predictions on my show. You're coming on next week. We'll talk about it. I'm going to ask you for some predictions, not opinions, but predictions. And I'll do that again on election day on Tuesday as well. So,
all right, well, we'll make a, and you're going to be back with us next Monday. So we'll do our predictions next Monday, not opinions. But I am glad to hear those early voting numbers. And that's pretty incredible because, I mean, again, if you had an hour long wait on Friday, people could still go and they could vote the next day, right? They could have voted the day before. This is the early voting period. So the fact that you've got that many people showing up in a bright red county, yeah, that is indicative, man. And we're seeing, you know, similar reports in Nevada. John Ralston does a really good job of just, you know, crunching the numbers and the blue firewall that he says Democrats have always had in Clark County is basically gone this year. Yeah. And instead, you've got a red firewall in rural Nevada that is counteracting the Democrats. So, you know, you look at these national polls and I mean, look, I could see, Mark, a situation where Kamala Harris maybe wins the popular vote based on, you know, large turnout in places like California and New York.
Yeah.
But she doesn't win where it's needed, right? She doesn't win Pennsylvania. She doesn't win Wisconsin. She doesn't win Georgia. All of those battleground states. Doesn't really do any good if you run up the polls on the coast and you run up the votes in, you know, Democratic strongholds when you need to be reaching swing voters in middle America. And that, I think, is where her campaign is really struggling. And I think, again, getting back to the gun issue, we're seeing this, you know, Boston Globe had a big story today about Jared Golden, Democrat in Maine. He had opposed a ban on so-called assault weapons until last year after the Lewiston murders. He came out and said, I was wrong. You got to ban these assault rifles. Got to do it now. Work with anybody in Congress to do it. Jared Golden could lose his seat, and the gun issue may very well be the issue that makes him a former congressman. A Boston Globe talked with several gun owners, including somebody who was wounded in that shooting, who said, I don't think a gun ban's the answer. And I've voted for Golden in the past, but I'm not voting for him this year. So
how politically expedient, right? How politically expedient to come out after that to try to take advantage of the push, because these people fall for media, right? I go back to Rick Scott after Parkland in Florida. Rick Scott was running for Senate as governor, if you recall, back in 2018 when Parkland happened. Now, Parkland dad, Ryan Petty, good friend of mine, good friend of yours, was on the show last night. I was up talking to him till 3 o'clock in the morning. You might be able to see it in my eyes. I'm a little tired today. But you know, here's a guy who lost his beautiful daughter that is out there stumping with all of us to expand our Second Amendment rights because he gets it. He understands it. Scott, on the other hand, now, you know, it's hard for me. It's hard to Monday morning quarterback this. He was under significant media pressure at the time after what happened at Parkland. He would have been better off in hindsight had he said, absolutely not. Am I going to screw 18 million Florida residents because of the actions of one criminal? I'm not going to take their constitutional rights from them by signing this bill. I understand the media pressure he was under. He thought it was a compromise. Now some of it's being repealed. But the one good thing that came out of that Parkland bill was the Guardian program in Florida. There's not been a school shooting in Florida since then because every school is armed and every criminal scumbag knows it. They'll go somewhere else. So it's borne out the fact that that really does work. And then you go back to Maine and you get the guy who falls for this media stuff, this intense media coverage after the shooting. Ooh, I can take advantage of this politically. We need to ban assault weapons. I think people see through this, Cam. They see through people like this at this point, which is Donald Trump's attraction to millions of Americans. He's not the politician. He's not giving us politics speech, political garbage. What you hear from him is who he is. It's what you get. It's very real and it's relatable to people. Let's talk briefly about the Joe Rogan podcast. My gosh, 12.6 million followers on Spotify, 17.6 or something followers on YouTube. This guy's had more views than have watched every major network in the past month combined, and he's still racking up like 1+ million views a day on this podcast. Okay, the impact that that's going to have away from mainstream media, I think, in the future, guys like this politician up in Maine are not going to be, they're going to have to start looking at what are they going to be saying about me over here in what is no longer fringe media, but is becoming mainstream media when you've got that many people watching that podcast. You and I have radio shows and podcasts, okay? We don't come close to Joe. Joe Rogan's a monster. It's that simple, okay? But we reach millions. And people are hearing these messages outside of mainstream media, with racist rally, Trump and his allies prove the Democrats' point. I mean, how many people are actually looking at that besides us and maybe 150 to 200,000 others? Maybe it goes viral. Maybe it gets a few million clicks on Twitter or something like that. But their days are numbered. And I think their days of influence to go back to Maine are waning quickly. And it's not going to bode well for the politicians that fall for this mainstream type media coverage anymore. It's not going to work that well for gun control in the future either. Hence the numbers, the demographics we were talking about, Black Americans, women, Latinos being the three fastest growing areas of gun owners in the country. Hence what we've seen in Florida after Parkland. We're in a different world now. And I think Donald Trump is taking advantage of that to great effect with his campaign. And it appears to be working. So that's my whole circle back with that whole deal. Get a little bit around the edges on that. But I think it all ties together in the long run.
I think you're right. All right, man. Well, I'm looking forward to joining you on the MonsterCast next Sunday. Looking forward to seeing you back here again for one final Monday with Mark before the election. As always, man, I appreciate it. Let folks know how they can check out the Daily Defense and the MonsterCast.
Yeah, armedamericanradio.com, armedamericanradio.com for everything you need. 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 Pacific, and Sundays, 8 to 11 Eastern, 5 to 8 Pacific. I'll see you on the radio, guys.
All right, Mark. Thanks again, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Cam. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
My thanks to Mark for joining us once again. Looking forward to seeing him back here next Monday. Like I said, for one final pre-election Mondays with Mark. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a story out of Florida, the Alachua Chronicle. And this is a true recidivist report. 17-year-old with 15 adult felony convictions, arrested for drug possession. 18-year-old companion arrested for carrying a concealed firearm. The 18-year-old companion, by the way, also has a juvenile record, but kind of pales in comparison to the 15 adult felonies that 17-year-old Theodore Isaiah Martin has been convicted of in the past. Both he and 18-year-old Joshua Edward Brown arrested a couple of days ago in Gainesville, Florida. Brown charged with unlawfully carrying a concealed firearm. Martin arrested on a warrant for violating probation, as well as charged with drug possession and giving a false name to an officer. It was Sunday morning, about 1:20 in the morning. Alachua County Sheriff's deputies trying to locate a stolen vehicle when they saw two people wearing black clothing and ski masks walking along the sidewalk on Tower Road. Now, listen, it's late October. North Florida, not really cold enough that you'd need a ski mask even in the overnight hours. The arresting deputy noted that there have been recent reports of burglaries and car thefts in this area. The suspects have been described as matching the builds of Brown and Martin, as well as wearing black clothing with masks. Deputy reported that both suspects told him they were juveniles, one of them, of course, not, the 18-year-old. And he noted that he could see part of a handgun in the front pocket of the 18-year-old's hoodie. So a search of Brown reportedly produced a handgun loaded with 7 rounds. Now, according to the Alachua Chronicle, Brown has a juvenile conviction that prohibits him from possessing firearms until he is 24. Martin, meanwhile, was charged with providing false information to law enforcement. He gave a fake name. Deputy discovered the right name. Also found that Martin was wanted for violating an adult probation sentence for a 3-hour burglary spree when he was 16. Martin's probation officer filed an affidavit back in July that said that Martin had not reported as required in June or July and had moved without providing his new address. This amazes me. You're 16 years old. You get an incredible deal that keeps you out of prison. Martin pled no contest to 14 adult felonies in that burglary case. He also pled no contest to 8 misdemeanors. And even though one of those felony charges carried a potential life sentence, the judge in that case sentenced Martin to 364 days in jail, followed by 10 years of probation, all sentences served concurrently. He was later convicted of a 15th felony, battery by a detainee, but was sentenced to time served in that case. So he could have been sentenced to life in prison at 16. Instead, he got basically a year behind bars, good credit for time spent while he was awaiting trial, and was sent on his way, told, report to your probation officer. Now, he's also was told, listen, if you don't follow the terms of your probation, that original sentence can be imposed on you. That, to me, seems like one of those things, okay, I'm going to stick to the straight and narrow, right? I got this potential prison sentence hanging over me. No. Just didn't show up, didn't talk to his probation officer. Well, now Martin has been ordered, held without bail. No guarantee that the original sentence is going to be imposed, but again, you kind of got to wonder. Why was that original sentence, again, 14 felonies, 8 misdemeanors, why was he cut so many breaks to begin with? Because it sounds like some prison time may have been the lesson that he needed to keep him on the straight and narrow. Today's Armed Citizen story from Sacramento, California, where a homeowner shot a suspected intruder. No charges filed in that case. Yes, even in Sacramento, you do have, even in California, you've got the right to protect yourself. According to Fox 40 in Sacramento, it was last Wednesday morning. Sacramento Police Department received reports of a gunfire and arrived to find an injured man with a gunshot wound. That man, believed to be the would-be burglar, taken to a local hospital, is expected to survive his injuries. The resident who fired the gun was not taken into custody. Police say that he was detained briefly at the scene but cooperated fully with their investigation, believing that this is, again, an act of self-defense. We'll see if we can find more information for you and bring it to you as the details become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, and able to do the right thing. A mail carrier in Chicago who saved an elderly woman's life after noticing that she had not been picking up her mail. Dory Carson is the postal worker in question, and she's been working in that neighborhood for about 5 years. Fox 32 in Chicago says she is adored by neighbors. Likewise, she has learned their names, even gotten to know their habits. So when she went to work after the Columbus Day holiday weekend, she noticed that the mail, one of her residents, hadn't been picked up. And there were also some packages that were starting to get stacked up on the porch. She said, I noticed it was 3 days worth of mail. And I'm like, well, that's not right, because she normally gathers the mail every day. So she collected everything up. She said, started knocking on her door so I could hand it to her, because I know she's elderly, but she didn't answer. So then Dory Carson, look, she could have kept on with her route, but it didn't sit right. So she went to another neighbor, Peggy Mason, and said, hey, you know, I've noticed she's not answering her door. She's, mail hasn't been collected. Peggy Mason called police, asked for a welfare check. First responders arrived and made their way inside, where they discovered that the woman had fallen. She was lying there at the bottom of her staircase, could not move, couldn't phone for help. She'd reportedly been there for 3 days. Peggy Mason says the first responders told her they're not sure how much longer she could have survived like that, that she was changing a light bulb and had fallen. They said she was extremely grateful. She was hoping that one of the neighbors would see something and call. And instead, it was Dory Carson, who noticed something out of the ordinary, alerted that neighbor, welfare check was made, and again, woman's life saved. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, Dory Carson. They're making the mean streets of Chicago a little more friendly. Thank you very much for your very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Legislation, litigation, regulation, and of course, the culture war attacks on your right to keep and bear arms as well. If you want to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member, got a great deal for you right now. Just use the promo code FIGHT. You can get 60% off of your VIP Platinum membership. You get all of the benefits of our VIP and VIP Gold programs, but you'll also get access to Town Hall TV. You'll get a discount at the Town Hall merch store, and you'll get the ability to contact Town Hall media writers like myself, John Petrolino, Tom Knighton, directly via private message. Again, just use the promo code FIGHT for 60% off your savings. We'll see you again tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.